Hello and good evening, all the weary travelers, wanderers, and the hitchhikers. This is the Airship. Pilot tonight is myself, Roy. We have Mandy up
here.
Hey,
everyone.
As our co-pilot. And our in-flight engineer and navigator, Mr. Sean.
How's it going?
So tonight, something you really normally wouldn't think of if you're into the Southern rock scene and listening to Southern rock. If you think of the Northwest, you're probably going to think of grunge more than anything else and the people that hailed from that region. But tonight on the show, we have a very special person, a very special guest from a band called Sweet Kiss Mama. If you're a fan of some of the old classic Southern rocks and even some of the newer Southern rock, you definitely want to pay attention to these guys. They are hitting it big and moving around the world. Got Mr. Jeff Hamill from Sweet Kiss Mama here is our guest for this trip tonight. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So, how are things going out there right now? What do you guys got on the plate?
Oh, it's busy. It's summertime. This is when all the festivals and fairs and all the really money making gigs come around. And it gets cold out here, and nobody wants to pay anymore. So you got to start doing club gigs.
Yeah,
but we're busy. We got a bunch of stuff coming up, and I think next weekend's a crazy one for us. We've got the Watershed Festival is a big, huge country festival that they've invited us to come play, which is cool because we aren't, in my mind, not much of a country band. I think we're more of a rock and roll band. But if you hear some country in it, then we're more than happy to play it. And then we've got a great show on Sunday up at the Triple Door in Seattle, which is probably one of the really, really greatest venues I've ever been in. We're really excited to be able to get a chance to play it. It's an amazing place, so we're looking forward to that one too.
Cool. Yeah, make hay while the sun shines, most definitely. So you and I met, about 3 years ago probably while I was out there in Washington, and have had a chance to have a few rap sessions since then.
Yeah.
When you were out there, you gave me a wonderful CD, actually a whole stack of them that I handed out all over the place, and finally landed you guys a killer gig with that. At least I think it was killer. Why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, it was fantastic. We played at Sturgis last year at the Easy Rider Saloon. By the way, thank you again and again and again. That was a really fun experience for us. People were really, really warm, really welcoming. We were, kind of a no-name band. Of course, nobody knew us who we are coming out of the Seattle area, heading over there. It was all big, big name bands and a couple of smaller bands playing a second stage. And we still had people coming over and dancing and coming to talk to us and tell us they enjoyed our show afterwards. So that was certainly cool and certainly nice to rub elbows with some bigger bands as well.
So I'm going to carry over a little bit from our theme on last week's show that we had, because I got a chance to meet with you guys a little bit after you got back from that show and the experience you had. Is anybody's wives listening right now? Any of you guys' wives listening? Or am I getting in trouble on this here?
No. Oh,
I want to hear about body paint.
Body paint, I have no clue what you're talking. Actually, here's the funny part. The body paint, all the stories you hear about Sergis are probably true. There's, the people get wild, people get crazy. All of the body paint was on women over the age of, 60.
Really?
Like it was all that we saw. We hung out pretty much close to home. We stayed at the Easy Rider. We figured they're paying us. We should probably give them our beer money. So we hung out pretty close to there. And I'm telling you, all the ladies that walked by and kind of graced that place were certainly an interesting age to be doing it.
God dang it! I was trying to get some blackmail material out of you here. You're just not working with me, bro.
Come on now.
We don't want to upset the wife. I know how that is. I'm a wife, okay? And I'm crazy. So.
No, but that is the truth. We really did. There wasn't a whole lot of overly crazy stuff that went on that we saw. So maybe we got lucky. Maybe we didn't get lucky. I guess whoever one of you it is either way.
That's still a really killer gig, though. I mean, I've never been to Sturgis, but I know it's a really huge event. So that must have been really awesome to play for an event that huge.
The Easy Rider Saloon. I mean,
yeah.
If you're going to do it right. Go to the place.
And that's just,
it only took me a year to get that booked.
yeah, Roy, definitely. You hooked us up huge. Man, it was such a great time, and they set you up over there. All the folks that are working for the facility there, it's like a big summer camp. There's all a bunch of like cabins together, kind of all in a row, and we all kind of had our own sleeping quarters, but we all kind of hung out after. None of us got home till 1-2 in the morning because we're all working so late. So we get out there, and it was kind of nice to kind of sit back and relax and have a beer and kind of just hang out with everybody afterwards, kind of decompress a bit. So made some really good friends over there. Met some other bands that we absolutely love, and made some good friends and the staff as well.
So now, I want to bounce back to when you and I first met. We met, where was it? Smokey Joe's out there.
And, yeah.
How do you pronounce that? The name of the town that Smokey Joe's in? I never can pronounce it right.
Fife?
Is it in Fife?
Fife.
I thought it was the one that started, that weird one that started with a P.
I'm trying to make fun of my hometown of Puyallup, Washington.
Yeah, Puyallup.
State Fair. Come on now.
But anyway...
United States, eighth largest state fair in the United States, right here.
Yep. Yeah, we met there, and, you know, I met you there with Ray Hayden from our sister label of 10 Stars out there, and he introduced me to you, and God, before we left, you stopped by the house, and he said, dude, you got to have all these, and you brought me a whole box full of these CDs, and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is what it's like to own a record label, and by the time I got done, I came with a suitcase, and I had planned on not taking much stuff, and thankfully I only packed it half full and left with, I still have several boxes of CDs from all kinds of people, including yourself, and it was this one, Rock Revival. Now, you guys waited almost 4 years to put out another CD. Tell us about this Rock Revival, the last one.
Yeah, Revival Rock, actually.
Revival Rock, I'm sorry.
But we released that one in two. You want me to tell you about the album or tell you why it took so long? I guess we could probably cover that.
We can get into why it took so long when we talk about the next album.
That was actually one of my questions. Thank you for stealing that, you know.
Yeah. No, she gets the next question on that. This album here, tell us about it, the inspiration for it.
Yeah, absolutely. We, man, so the band initially was a group of guys that we had grown up playing together just in the church. I mean, we were the Sunday morning, Wednesday night, you know, Sunday evening. We were playing all the time at the church together. And so kind of one morning, you kind of looked at each other and thought, you know, let's try something different. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the music we were playing. Love gospel, love spirituals, love church music. But we're like, let's do something with a little different theme to it, maybe a little more rock and roll than what we're doing. So we literally spent like a year in my living room just with acoustic guitars, just playing. I mean, it was three of us guitar players. I didn't have a bassist at the time and a drummer, just sitting and kind of talking music and trying to figure out what we wanted to play and what we wanted to sound like. And, my brother came home from in the Air Force, and we're like, wow, well, he plays bass, so plugged him in. And within a couple of months of him coming aboard, a friend of ours said, you know, you guys really aren't a real band unless you're playing a show. I'm like, yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. So we played our first show and kind of went on from there. Later the album, you know, we really just wrote a bunch of songs and really not having any expectation or idea of what we wanted to do. Just kind of had a bunch of songs and got contacted by a guy that owns a studio and was managing a couple of bands up here by the name of Joe Reinecke, owns Orbit Audio in Seattle, that a lot of really, really great bands, really big bands have been through there as well. And he just said, hey, you know, I like what you guys are doing. Would you mind, you know, if you're going to do an album, would you mind working with me? And we're like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, how often does that happen? These, you know, these guys that are, you know, this guy owns a studio and is working with all these artists, really wants to work with us. And so kind of went in and, again, not much expectation, just saving up all of our money and put this album out just independently using CD Baby. And again, not having a lot of expectation on what we were looking for from it. Within, I think it was about 3 months, it shot up to being the number one Southern rock and number one roots rock album for CD Baby. And within about 6 months, it was all the way up to the number two selling rock album overall, which, if you guys are familiar with CD Baby, it's like, I think they say 300,000 artists and something like over a million songs. It is the largest independent music source on the internet. We're blown away. We're like, this may be jumping the gun too, Roy, but a lot of it was happening in Europe. You know, we got a couple of blogs that grabbed onto us and it just took off.
Yeah, and this did really well in Europe. I mean, I remember coming back out there subsequently and seeing you boxing up CDs to ship off to Europe that were actually getting sold in the stores over the market and things like that. And you charted on the FM, the radio stations out there and everything out there. And it just shot. I was surprised to see how long it took for the next one, but I want to hold off on that and talk about this one a little bit. There's one song on this that hit me. And I've heard which one's your favorite off the album, and it struck me because of this part of the country that I'm in right here. Around here, if you want to get closer to God, you know, people know you go up on the mountain, you get into the mountains, that's where you go to get closer to God, that's where you go to get centered, that's everything, and the people out here are from the mountain, and that's it. And you got a song on here that speaks of that, and it totally gripped me right in my soul, as well as being just a great Southern rock tune, and that's Son of the Mountain. What were your thoughts on that? Give us a few thoughts on that, and then let's let everybody hear it.
Yeah, no, it's exactly how you described it. I mean, I look out my back door and we see Mount Rainier, which for us is a dormant volcano. They tell us, I don't know if you saw a few years ago, there was a number of like disaster movies coming out where volcanoes were you know, going off. I can't remember the name of the one, but it's actually set in Ording, which is the town right next to Puyallup. But we fully expect that mountain to blow sometime. And so there's this kind of, you know, bittersweet, like it's a beautiful mountain. We look at it all the time, but we know it's going to blow eventually. It's actually fairly eerie. Monday mornings at noon. Every Monday at noon, the sirens go off just to the practice run, kind of the fire drill for when it finally happens. But anyway, growing up with that.
I remember that when I was a little kid, the air raid things, what to do in case of a nuclear bomb, you know, get under your desk, put your head between your legs, all that kind of stuff, and kiss you know what, goodbye.
Yeah. Well, it's not a, I don't say love hate because that doesn't describe it correctly. It's a healthy fear of knowing it's going to happen eventually and just, you know, kind of coming to grips with that. But the idea that we're part of that mountain, we're part of the trees and all this area is all kind of part of where we come from and what we do. And it really, for me, in writing lyrically, it was like, you know, we play kind of this quote-unquote southern rock, but it's more of like, this is where we're from. This is kind of what we do. And I love that you grab onto that, too, because I think anybody that kind of has that, you know, a part of their surroundings, a real naturalist kind of a view of things, hopefully they grab onto it, too, because that's exactly what it is for me.
Well, cool. Let's let everybody else grab a piece of this and cue that thing up for us, Sean. Take us down that journey.
Won't breathe the water of creation.
Well, it's my turn now. I thought since we were doing a segment with some Southern rock that I would use my Southern accent that I usually had. So, you know, I was just going to say.
She comes by it honestly.
What?
Yeah.
I said she does come by it honestly.
And I do. It's because my father, you know, he's from North Carolina, so, you know, it just kind of comes naturally to me, and even though I'm here in Montana. Anyway, I was wanting to know, actually. I know it took about 4 years to bring A Reckoning Is Coming, or A Reckoning Is Coming is how I would like to say it. I was wondering, why did it take so long to bring this one out? I mean, why did it take so much time?
Well, you know, I tell you, the first album came out, and we went a couple of years on it. I did release it 2010, 2011 was really, it hit, locally over here, kind of later in the year in 2010. So 2011 was the big, you know, all the festivals and everything through 2011. Our bass player at the time said, you know what, I don't want to be in a band anymore. So he had to take off. Almost within weeks of this happening, our drummer decided he needed to move on as well. So we went, we had to switch in with a new rhythm section. So come the first of the year, it was rebuild, learn the new songs, write new stuff. Literally almost 365 days to the day it happened again, we had to find a new rhythm section.
Oh my gosh.
So we were writing songs and you know, getting stuff, you know, ready to go. It just, you know, for whatever reason, we just had turnover twice. And it's, you know, it's still friends with the band, still guys that we, you know, appreciate and still call friends, but just didn't want to do the schedules that we were doing. It just was too much for them. So, really, we're kind of in a holding pattern for a bit going into that second year, have the new rhythm section, and really thinking, okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to, you know, work with Joe again? Do we want to go somewhere else? Well, we still love Joe, and Joe's still a friend. We got an opportunity to record at Lennon Bridge Studio, if you guys are familiar with the Seattle sound that's come through. There's you know, some great studios up here. So we were talking with them about going and recording in there, and really out of the blue got an email, and this really, it's kind of the track record for this band. This is really the way it works. Got an email from a guy by the name of Ken Coomer, who was the drummer for, if you're familiar with the band Wilco, or Uncle Tupelo, he was a drummer for both those bands. He sent us an email. We had submitted a song for a songwriting, or I did, had submitted a song for a songwriting contest, and hadn't heard anything about it. And once I submitted, it was months later, I get this email from Ken. Ken says, hey, congratulations, your song made the finals of the songwriting contest that John Carter Cash was running. He said, I'm one of the judges. He said, you didn't win, but you were in the finals. I really liked your song. Would you be interested in coming down to Nashville and working with me in my studio down here? I kind of went, wait, there's just no way.
Ken Coomer, wasn't he an engineer or something like that?
He is a producer now as well. I don't know if he's an engineer. I know he's got a couple of, well, more than a few bands that he's been a producer for. Huh. But anyway, he's done some studio work as well. I know he's done some, you know, some bigger albums with some pretty big names. Really, I had to send him an email, and really it was a couple of emails and some phone calls before I finally thought, okay, maybe this guy is legit. Maybe it's real. So anyway, I ended up having the opportunity to go down and record with him down there on the new one. So really the reason it took 4 years is that we just, you know, I needed a solid lineup for, as the singer and the songwriter, main songwriter, I needed to feel secure in what I had before I went in and put it down, if that makes sense.
I do understand that. So that makes a lot of sense. That actually explains a lot right there. The fact that you had to look for all that. I haven't had the chance to do that yet. I have a band myself, but I just feel like it would be so much work to find another drummer and a bass player myself, you know? Gosh, well, yeah. Someone that you'd feel comfortable with.
And at the time of the most recent change, I mean, we were, you know, 4.5 years into playing, and it's like, that's a lot of songs for somebody to learn to catch. And then you have to write the new stuff, and it was like, you know, and I love Jimmy Hughes is our drummer, and my little brother, of course, is back on bass now, actually, if coming full circle. But Jimmy, I'll tell you the story of Jimmy. When we were, you know, kids in high school, he was a few years older than us, and he used to be the drummer for all the bands, the cool bands we'd go see at, like, the Rec Center, all the all-ages shows. Yeah. So he was a guy we kind of grew up like, yeah, that guy, you know, he's cool, and his bands are cool, and you know, our very first show, to make it even a smaller world, our very first show, unbeknownst to us, Jimmy was playing in another band. I didn't recognize him. I didn't know about this till he came back and was playing for us. He was playing for another band on that same bill that we had played on, you know, all those years later for our show. So anyway.
Well, that's really cool, you know.
Yeah.
Also, I was actually wondering, the song A Reckoning Is Coming on the album. What was that about? I mean, what were you thinking of when you wrote that song?
You know, for me, it's a continuation almost on that same theme of Son of the Mountain. It's funny that we're talking about those back-to-back because that doesn't often come up. But for me, it's like eventually that mountain's going to blow. Yeah. So using kind of that as my palette and coming back around and really the theme of consequences are what the album overall is about. And that song being the kind of the centerpiece of it for me, that just a reckoning is coming and, you know, knowing, you know, there are consequences. You don't see them quite yet, but something's going to happen. So that was really what was fueling that particular song.
Well, that makes sense. That makes a lot more sense to me looking at the title of the song, you know, a reckoning.
should I just put it as a reckoning? No G.
A reckoning. Yeah, just do it as a reckoning.
Nice.
Sorry.
No worries.
That's okay. That's it. I want to hear it now. I got to be honest. I haven't heard the whole album yet, and I want to hear it because I've heard it in bits and chunks and pieces and whatnot. Can I cue that up? Number two? Second track, second album.
Reckoning. A reckoning is coming.
So they have a green, hearing a glory from the power from the world to see. A steady hand on the plow for the breaking earth. A prophecy from a son of mountain's day of birth. Ooh, reckoning. It's coming.
that take me back. I'm listening to those guitar riffs and that, and I'm thinking, like, let's see, yeah, my junior year of high school, sitting in a friend's basement or in a garage somewhere, or actually where I come from, sitting out in a barn on the edge of town with the stereo blast and 8-track playing back then. Yeah, that old.
Yes, and,
yeah, some Boone's Farm and sitting on the hay bales having a good time. Yeah, that's where that takes me. I love it.
Sweet. Thank you.
I appreciated it too, just so you know.
Well, thank you.
So you were talking about the song that won some awards and stuff. Tell us about that song. You mentioned it kind of got you back onto this other album, got you into back into recording and everything again. What song was that?
There's a song called "Get Some Love" on the album "A Reckoning Is Coming." It's called the Northwest Music Experience. It's the Seattle Songwriters Guild. They had, I think, for the first time last year, they had an award ceremony. Here's the categories. Submit your song, like a Seattle Grammys, for lack of a better term. The song "A Reckoning Was Coming" was named the best alt/classic rock song. And I don't know if we're alternative or if we're classic rock, but if we're the alternative to classic rock, then I'll take it. Either way, we got a sweet little trophy and a nice little prize for doing that. So we were pretty proud of that. Aaron and I wrote that song, and we're pretty we really like playing that one live.
That's pretty badass. Got a trophy and everything.
Jeez. Not that songwriting is a contest, but it's nice when someone says, "Hey, you guys worked really hard on this, and we appreciate it."
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Where's that trophy at?
It's in my house. It's on top of my my wine cabinet. It sits up there anytime I need to grab a bottle of wine. I just look at it. And
wine.
I was gonna say, what's hanging off of it, or what's it sitting on? What does it taste?
Just on the wine chest. Nothing fancy.
Well, just out of curiosity, what does "get some love" exactly mean? I mean, like, I'm assuming it's, get some love. That's what the song's about. But I listened to it. I did listen to it today, but I didn't get the full, feeling of what it was about. I wanted to know what it was actually about from your perspective since you wrote it.
It's
on the spot.
I'm just curious,
Sometimes you write a song and you want just it's really meaningful, and it's like, hey, I've really pulled my soul out for this song, and this is, what I'm trying to say. And sometimes you just scratch out a song on a piece of paper and you just want to, the attitude is, I just need to get some love. There's nothing else to it. It was really kind of half poking fun at, people you see, they're just really desperate maybe out there. But really, it's probably a little internal as well. I'm really probably shining a light on myself as well, that sometimes it's just, you just need to get some love. There's no time to make it right. No time to, let's talk about it and have a conversation, or, let's make it nice. I just need to get some, what I'm saying?
I assumed that you were probably talking about you and your woman, you and your wife. I was thinking you were talking about you and her, and I was like, oh, that's so cute. He's talking about his wife up there, I don't know. That's what I thought. But that's just me being me. So,
well, it is. Hey, believe it or not, being married, that it isn't a drop a coin and pull the lever. Sometimes you got to work for it. From the husband's point of view, you do.
Yeah, you do. Husband's got to do some shit.
Sometimes you're making love, and sometimes you're like, I just got to work something out.
So that's kind of what I got from it. I just wanted to make sure I was a little bit correct. I didn't want to just throw it out there. That's what I thought, but. That's kind of cool, though. I like that.
And just so you know, I love you, bro.
Being a songwriter as well, that you can kind of take liberties. It doesn't have to. For the most part, most of the songs I write aren't about me, but you kind of put a little bit of yourself in there sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to when you're writing it.
So. Well, yeah. Yeah, but quite honestly, the majority of that song was me kind of poking fun at guys that just look. And girls, too. Women are just as bad.
Yep, they are. Nobody's worse than the other, in my opinion, so. Women just try to hide it more for some reason. I don't know why.
But they're not as good at it.
They're really not. I mean, I don't know what they're doing.
We can just be assholes and everybody expects it, and that's normal. And we can hide behind being an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't expect someone to be an asshole. I'd be like, you're an asshole.
I can't stand assholes. Yeah.
Yeah, assholes piss me off. I give them the finger.
Like guys that make fun of your favorite bands. I mean, those
yeah, I know. Yeah, what the fuck? What's wrong with them? God. How dare they have an opinion? That is just not okay.
I gotta sit next to her, and if she wants my opinion, I'm sure she's gonna beat it out of me at some point in time.
Just
I've learned to accept everyone's opinions. Okay.
Oh shit.
whatever.
Sorry, I had something stuck in my throat.
F you. You know.
So should we listen to what do we want to listen to here?
Well, I wanted to. I don't know. I wanted to shout out for a song that kind of when I was listening to your stuff, the song "Breathe Rebel" stuck out to me a little bit because I heard it as like a song that was about. That no matter what anybody said around you or your surroundings or anything like that, that you were going to be yourself no matter what. And I kind of thought that was cool. I mean, I don't know if that's what you were thinking when you wrote it, but I got that vibe from it, that it was like, I'm me and, you know, like I should be proud that this is me, you know, like no matter what, you're going to breathe rebel. And I, you know, I don't know. I just thought of it that way. Like you're going to be yourself, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a, like a battle cry, if nothing else.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, exactly. And that song kind of stuck out to me because I like songs like that. I like songs that have a lot to do with you being you and that's it. Like, you're you, you know, and you should be proud of it. So, yeah, I personally really like that song. I didn't see that you had it acoustic, though. Now I've got to listen to the acoustic version. But anyway, I just want to throw that out there, I guess. Sorry.
Yeah, no, thanks for digging it. You're dead on. It really was, you know, mama didn't raise no fool and daddy didn't, you know, it's all kind of, this is where I come from and this is what I've got for you.
Yep. That's what I thought. See, I had a feeling. I was like, I know that's what it's about. And I just wanted
it's a North Carolina blood. That's
North Carolina blood.
So which one are we going to go after here? Are we going to do some Get Some Love or Breathe Rebel next?
Oh, man, that's tough.
That's a tough decision. Anybody got a coin out there? Somebody?
No, it's up to you. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be forceful about it. I like them both. It's fine. I've heard them both. They're both good songs.
So. Can we handle giving all the listeners a long enough break to listen to two songs?
Should we do it back to back.
So we do it back to back, Get Some Love, and Breathe Rebel. And then we're going to get into my favorite just because of the name here, but I'm going to hold back on this one. So let's have track number 5 off that second album, Get Some Love, and track Breathe Rebel.
That's right.
I'm a man with a need and you know it. Just give a wiggle and a wink and we're rolling. There ain't no time to get it right. Come on, let's hit this and move on. You've been scooting around that dance floor all evening, shaking it like gospel, bringing sinners to believe in. I'm fired up like your daddy's 62 for. That backseat lover knows exactly why I'm here to get some love. I gotta get some love, yeah, yeah. I've been holding back too long and it's showing. And with every passing minute, trouble's growing. I ain't got time to make it right. Come on, let's hit this and move on. Well, I love it that you're wearing my t-shirt. I'm bouncing around with nothing underneath it. I'm fired up like your daddy's 62 for. That back to love knows exactly why I'm here. I get some love. I gotta get some love. Get some love. Come on and give me all your love. Yeah, yeah.
gotta get some love. Come on and give me all your love. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got to get some love. Come on and give me all your love. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Take me down.
Mama never ain't no fool.
Take me down home. Now, just for those of you out there on the ship traveling with us, just so you know what we did there, is it's an old DJ trick from way back in the day when I used to DJ. If a DJ wanted to get up and go out and do something like burn one, go to the bathroom, something like that, they'd play a song like Inagata de Vida that took forever to get
Stairway.
Stairway to Heaven, Freebird. Yeah, yep. That was the DJ taking a break because he needed to go do something that you didn't need to know about. In this case, though, nah, this is DJ sitting back, having a good time, listening, drinking a few beers, and really enjoying something good here. Definitely enjoying something good.
For sure. I agree.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I agree. I got to get myself a shotgun over here.
Elvis is left the house now.
I actually had a question to ask you, if you don't mind. I was going to ask you, what were some...
Wait a second.
Oh, never mind.
That southern voice.
Oh, yeah. What were your main influences to drive you to play southern rock and roll? Because it didn't sound like you started out with southern rock necessarily, and then it kind of turned into that from what you said earlier.
What
were some influences of yours that weren't even... It doesn't even have to be southern rock or anything like that, but what were some influences that made you who you are today?
Absolutely. I tell you, growing up, we weren't allowed to listen to rock and roll in the house. My mom and dad were, I wouldn't say like strict religious household. They had certain ideas on things that they wanted us to do and things they didn't want us to do. So for being a kid, like 9 or 10, when you first start listening to like the radio and stuff, and we couldn't have any, rock music in the house. I said, what about the Beatles? And mom was like, well, that's a little too hard rock and roll.
How
about the Beach Boys? So I grew up, for my early teens, thinking the Beach Boys were the band. The rock. And harmonies were amazing. Everything about him was awesome. Yeah. They had that sweet scene in Teen Wolf where he's running and slides. Michael J. Fox slides down the hall to Surfing USA. That was the band I wanted to be when I grew up.
I started out with Elvis Presley, and he was only okay and cool because of his Christmas album.
The other music in the house was more like older country stuff. Like, it was Merle Haggard, and it was Willie Nelson was huge in the house. And going to the early 80s, there was Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, and certainly some that era of stuff. Like, the Gaither Vocal Band was kind of, they were country, but they were a gospel band, but they sang with like the, so it was that crossover stuff. We got to listen to that. So that was in my heart of hearts. That's what I listened to. But growing up playing, you start in the church when you're a musician, and they recognize it early enough, they plug you in right away. So I'm like a 12-year-old kid playing drums on Sundays and, was really involved with that. So for, most of my life was doing that style of music, that gospel and the spirituals and that style of music. So when we first started trying to write our own stuff, we thought we were writing what we thought were like rock songs. It was straight ahead rock and roll. We wanted to be like Jet or like Wolf Mother at the time, if you remember those bands from years ago. We loved those bands, and I wanted to be that style, that real gritty throwback rock and roll. And we did our first couple of shows, and people would come up afterwards and, hey, I really appreciate you guys, and I really like those southern rock songs you guys were doing. When you're first playing shows live, you do a lot of covers, right? Like, half of our set was covers, or a third of it was covers. Mm-hmm. And it took us a bit to realize that the songs that we're talking about, were the original stuff. They're like, I didn't really recognize that song, but I like that southern aspect to it. I'm like, it didn't click that, until a while we kind of went, okay, well, hang on a second. So maybe doing this for as long as we have, playing church music, it just is in what we do. So we quit fighting it. We quit trying to say, that sounds too southerny, or that sounds too much like a church melody. And we just kind of, went with what came natural. And so, I don't shy away from people saying we're southern rock, but if you ask me, I think more correctly for me, it's roots rock. It's American roots rock. There's a blues element, country element.
Yeah, that's true. I kind of felt that too when I listened to it. A little bit of a blues thing to it, with the way you sang a little bit too. Actually, your vocals.
I'm not trying to sound any way in particular. I wish I was a much better singer and I could be more of changing how I sound. But it just is what it is.
Well, you're just fine. You actually sound quite wonderful. So,
I've always enjoyed the vocals in all of your stuff, and there's just a solid strength and power that comes from behind it. I mean, when I listen to you sing, it's not someone getting up there and spitting out lyrics and words and trying to, I'm going to say some taboo things here, but it's not, when you get up there and sing, I don't hear someone worrying about what's my pitch control like, am I standing right on a mic or anything like that. So I hear someone getting up there and they're singing something that's coming from deep inside, and it's just flowing out.
I kind of felt that too, actually. Yeah. Like, even though you're considered like a southern rock band and all that, like, I still felt like there was a lot of emotion behind like what you were trying to write and say and things like that, even though. I don't know, like, I'm not that familiar with a lot of southern rock bands, but the few that I've heard, and stuff like that, like, they're really good and everything, but they don't sound all that super emotional to me, not always, And you have a lot of that behind a lot of your songs that I heard. I was like, oh, like he actually has a lot of emotion behind what he's trying to sing about. You sound like you're kind of trying to do your own thing, really, which is cool.
Yeah, it just comes right out. I mean, I keep going back. Literally, my all-time favorite of all the songs that I've listened to that you've done is Son of the Mountain. And when I hear that, it just flows out. And all the rest of the songs flow out the same way. These are flowing out from who you are, where you are, where you've come from, what's happened in life. This is, I mean, the essence of Southern rock started out with blues and soul coming out of the South. And
that explains the gospel that you grew up with,
actually. And everything. And, you know, it's a lot of the shows that keep going back to that. You know, I got some people that came in to do some R&B and going back to gospel on that. Gospel is such a great founding point for creating music that comes from the soul, from the heart, and being passionate about it. And that's what I hear when I hear you sing. I don't worry about, does he sound right? Is he on pitch? I don't even care. It doesn't even matter, just so you know, and in my humble opinion.
It matters to a point. Okay, coming from a vocalist. But I think emotion is more important in my, like, some of my favorite singers are not even like the best singers in the world. They're just really,
they lay everything. Iggy Pop and he can't sing.
Yeah, they lay everything out there. Trent Reznor, he's not the best singer ever, but he's so emotional when he sings. Like, everything he says means something to me. And it's like, you know, the fact that he does that to me means that he's doing a great job being a vocalist.
Yep.
And so you do portray a lot of emotion behind what you're singing. I think it's really cool.
Is your face red yet?
Sorry,
are you blushing?
You know, I'm
it is
here.
Cool. I did notice that about you. That's all. I'm just saying.
No, you don't need a shovel to get out of this. Sorry. Relish in it. Swim in it.
It's you know, I appreciate that, you guys. I think if you get a sense of us really striving to be genuine in what we're doing, then I think we're doing what we're trying to do. I think for us, and even lyrically, kind of touching back on Son of the Mountain and A Reckoning, the first line of A Reckoning is, you know, we bury our dead amongst the roots of the evergreens. And that's just me saying, hey, this is where we come from. You know, I realize we sound maybe someplace different. And for me, it's real important. You know, we talk about being from Puyallup, and we all the time, everywhere we go, hey, we're from Puyallup. It's important for me to be able to relate to people that this is where we're from. This is where our roots are. For a long time, and even still, we're from outside of Seattle. We're from Puyallup. It's probably, 40, 45 minutes south of Seattle. And Tacoma's right next to us. And there's bands down here that constantly are, hey, we're a Seattle band. We're from Seattle. And they play a show up there every few months or something. And it's like, you know, maybe just be where you're from. You know, maybe just, you know, there's a break in authenticity when I have, you know, I see on somebody's Facebook page or they're posting how they're from Seattle. I'm like, you know, you grew up two blocks from me, man. I don't need to hear that you're, you know, trying to be cooler by being from Seattle. Cause I think,
That. That is kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's comical. I think about all the places I lived. I grew up in Buffalo, Wyoming. Graduated from Belfry, Montana. I was a Belfry bat. You know what? I'm proud to be a Belfry bat.
Yeah,
and if I was a musician from Belfry that was a Belfry bat, I'd be proud of that too.
Right? God, I agree with that. Just be where the hell you're from. Quit trying to be too.
There's so much more for authenticity for me when I hear people say, hey, I'm from, I don't know, Hoboken, Wisconsin, or, I don't know, wherever they're from, small town. That's much more authentic to me than somebody, hey, we're from totally from LA, or, I'm in a Nashville theater. It's like, nobody's from Nashville. Don't tell me you're from Nashville. Nobody's from Nashville. So everybody moves there. You know, it's just kind of that thing. And it's not, you don't hear it as much anymore out of Seattle nationally, but there's still bands locally. They're like, hell yeah, we're from Seattle.
Oh, they definitely are. Well, we're about wrapping down to that time. I want to mention a couple of things here. First of all, get on CD Baby and check out the CDs by Sweet Kiss Mama. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee it. At the very least, get on Reverb Nation and give us some listens. Rack their points up on there. Move them up the charts a little bit for these guys. They're getting ready to go over to Europe on a tour over there. Looking forward to that and hearing some of the stuff. I hope some things get recorded for that. About to wrap down the end of the show, so I got to do that whole sponsorship thing and say thank you to everybody and all that stuff. So Yellowstone Watermelon Cellars and Winery. They're one of the sponsors of the show. Please come out on Wednesday nights, and we do live recordings of the artists out there. We're doing a compilation CD of that, so if you're an artist and you'd like to come out, please come out there for that. We'll do some recording with you and put you on a compilation, as well as Friday and Saturday nights. We have live music out there as well. Yellowstone Valley Brewing for providing us with brew for the show, so we have just a little bit more relaxation while we're here. Adventure Whitewater, they pay the bills for me, so I don't have to eat ramen noodles every night, although I ate them tonight. And if you mention the airship to them, you will get a discount on your trips there. And Legendary Tattoo, if you want the best in tattoos in the region, go down to Legendary, talk to Jason or Cameron. Jason's from the ever-famous, infamous House of Ink in Venice Beach, and Cameron is one of the best street artists I've ever seen. He'll do some wonderful ink for you. Jeff, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. We're going to wrap it up with a couple of last songs from your albums here. We're going to do Dirty Uncle Deezer, track number 8 off your second album, and wrap it up with Mercy Love on there. Thank you so much for being here, bro. Really appreciate it.
Started out rough, but it was pretty cool.
Well, thanks for having me, Roy. Love you, buddy. Looking forward to hanging out with you when you come over here again. And just thanks for letting me on the show. Can I say real quick, if folks really want to stay connected with us, skmband.com. That's skmband, all lowercase.com is our website. All of our information, all of our ways to contact and connect with us are all there.
Thank you so much, man. Have a beautiful evening and create a wonderful night for yourself. And for all you people out there, thanks for joining us on the Earthship. This flight's over for the night. Getting ready to land. Come back to reality.
Half a pimp, three-quarter lover, and all bad news. Not a word for this almost twice a man, from the brim of his hat to the point on his boot. The whole world in the palm of his hand, but a big old hole in his heart. Never knowing that just what he needs is a good woman or a bad girl to starve. You better make some room for love. Crumbling like the last dead leaf in the wintertime. Best believe that you gotta make some room for love, but don't be dirty, Uncle Deezer. One day, old Dirty Deez, he met his match in a roller skating queen. And a hooch, she was known to her friends just as beautiful as she was mean. She said, hey, ma'am, why don't you come over here? So he went just as quick as she pleased. You're gonna do everything that I like, or you'll spend your whole life on your knees. Or get up and run, Uncle Deezer. Woo! Some room for love. You're gonna need it when the whole wide world is falling down. Won't even see him crumbling like the last dead leaf in the wintertime. Best believe that you got to make some room for love, or else be dirty, Uncle Deezer.
Uncle Deezer.
Yeah, you know I feel alright.
Sturgis.